So, Chris Walker here, Kukubri Book Week with Jerry Hassan, my Hello. Partner in crime. And today we're talking to John Nelson, who has been on the trail of a broken shoe for many years now. Because, John, you originally rode in the footsteps of your great-great-great-grandfather, John Kerr, 11 years ago?
11 years ago, yeah.
And the book is only just out, or
just
recently.
Out this year, yeah.
So the first question is, ride to book, 11 years, that's a long time.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. But initially, the basic story, which is a tragic story, but it's a fascinating story, but it's a true story nevertheless. And but it took a lot of research. So I've researched in Edinburgh, Kilmarnock at the Burns Centre, at Ayr. I've been to Kew. It took a lot of researching to find out the background. And then, of course, there's only really 2/3 of the book is on the stolen horse story.
Yeah.
I branched out, shall we say. My grandfather told me the stories on his knee maybe 70 odd years ago.
Wow.
And when I started to research other stories, I found just how fascinating and how accurate they were.
Yeah.
Because I always say when I'm describing it that Grandpa's stories are remarkably true, and this is because Grandpa's tell the same stories again and again and again. So it's a bit like learning your times table long ago.
Yeah.
It proved to be, some of the tales he told me proved to be far more detailed than the basic information he gave me, but the basic information was correct.
And at what age, after sitting on grandfather's knee, did you think to yourself, I'm going to ride that trail?
It wasn't until perhaps I was 60 that I discovered the main details.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 65, it occurred to me, I wonder if I could ride that. And I thought at the time I was an old bloke, but anyway, that's 11 years ago.
You're not an old bloke at all, but that's...
It was at that stage, and once I'd discovered who the ancestor was and the route that he took, and in fact the time, the era, once I've discovered those things, that made it the thought of retracing the steps much more interesting.
John, just for our listeners, without giving away all your book, obviously, and you want people to read and buy the book, just tell us a little bit about John Kerr's story and why it really mattered to revisit it and retell it, because some people won't know that.
Yeah, well, John Kerr, he was quite a benevolent chap. He lived on a route that people often passed, and he often gave hospitality to passing travellers, and so it was particularly annoying for him, shall we say, that he was betrayed by a friend, he thought, who stole his favourite horse. So basically, he took off into the Highlands after his favourite horse.
Oh.
And
what happened as a result of that?
Well, as a result of that, John got his horse back, and that was basically all he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But he had started to put the wheels in motion for something much more dark, and the man was tried, and he became the last man hanged in Scotland for horse stealing.
Gosh.
Yeah. Wow. But he became, you notice the word, became.
Became.
At the moment he was hanged, he was not the last man hanged, he was only the most recent.
Of course.
Good but point. They changed the law, and horse stealing was removed from the list of capital crimes.
Gosh.
So he therefore became the last man hanged.
And that horse was a Clydesdale?
No.
Oh.
There was no proper Clydesdale breed then. It was produced in perhaps the later part of the 19th century. And I don't know when the first Clydesdale pedigree stud book or whatever was created, but it was probably in the sort of 1860s or 1870s, I could be entirely wrong with that, but it was much, much later. So, the chances are it would be a reasonably heavy horse.
Yeah.
But not a Clydesdale.
But you decided to do this trail on a Clydesdale.
Yeah.
Is that because that was, you know, you had a Clydesdale at home and you thought...
No, we used to have Clydesdales. My father and grandfather were great Clydesdale breeders. And I always had a fondness of them. And it just happened that my wife bought me a day's fell riding down in Cumbria. In fact, it happened before that. We rode a Clydesdale up in Skye at Skye Heavy Horses. And it was wonderful, a wonderful experience. But the people that owned it were renting steading and buildings from the MacDonald clan. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't really keep the buildings up. Yeah. So they started to look for somewhere else. And their ideal was somewhere in Scotland with beach frontage. Mm-hmm. But they didn't find anything. So they found somewhere in Milham in Cumbria. And then the interesting part, they decided to ride the horses from Skye to Milham.
Really?
Rather than take them on a wagon. So this is two or 300 miles.
Yes, at least.
Yeah. So they wrote to everybody that had any connection with them and asked, would you like to join us? So my daughter and I went on one part of the ride.
Oh, wow.
And subsequent to that, my wife bought me a day's fell riding down in Milham for my Christmas. So a friend and I went and we deliberately took the owners for their supper at night and happened to drop in conversation that we were planning this ride. And they took the bait and said, oh, we'll lend you the horses.
Oh, fantastic.
If you feed them all winter.
Yeah.
So it was mutually beneficial.
It worked out well for each other. Yeah. So you're going to be here, and we don't, as Jerry said on the podcast, we don't want to give too much away about your afternoon with us here at the Selkirk Arms on Friday the 3rd of March, where you're going to be talking about this book. We're sort of really wanted to get to know you a little bit more, John, before you tell everybody at the book festival, because we'll record that as well as a podcast about the book and the trail and the fact that John Kerr was the last man hanged in Scotland for horse stealing. But your childhood, where did you grow up, John?
I grew up in the Parton Crismichael area.
So you really are, you know...
Yes, so I'm local.
Local through and through.
Yeah, through and through. My grandfather, Nelson, came in 1919 when he came back from the First War. Uh-huh. He was in the cavalry. But my other grandfather, maternal grandfather, he had been here maybe from 1890, maybe. Wow. Something like that.
Yeah.
So we're newcomers, really.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. So born Parton. So school.
No. Born in Crismichael.
Born in Crismichael.
Yeah, but lived
in Parton.
There's a fine dividing line. Our property spans both.
Does it? Okay. Both parishes, I suppose. There'd be the parish of Crismichael and parish of Parton. Where was school then, Crismichael?
Parton and then Crismichael.
Really? So there was a secondary school at Crismichael?
No.
No?
Parton school closed and then we went to Crismichael.
Oh, okay.
And, the Parton, what was I going to say about the Parton? The boundary between the two parishes is the Spearford Burn, where supposedly there was a battle.
Right.
Historically, Ted Cowan said, "Nah, there was never a battle. It was just a Victorian invention." I don't know, but we called our house after the burn or after the battle, depends which.
Okay, and what's the house called?
Spearford.
Okay, Spearford.
Because it's the Spearford Burn.
This could be in Macmillan's Gallery, couldn't it? It's a creative guide by an unreliable local, Hugh Macmillan's book.
Unreliable.
I'm going to have to look through and see if there's anything on Crismichael or Parton.
And when was that battle meant to have taken place?
Well, I don't know. The vague mention of it, it appeared to be sort of, I don't know, Middle Ages maybe, I don't know. It was supposedly between the Glendonmans or Glendinnings of Parton and the Gordons of Lochinvar.
Right.
But whether it was just a Saturday night punch up or something more serious, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was we found a part of a Roman chariot or a Roman era chariot in that field, and we also found a Bronze Age spearhead.
Mm.
So I said to David Devereux, there's a spear found in that burn,
mm-hmm.
and there's part of the Roman chariot, which you've got now in your museum. Oh, but the Bronze Age spear is much, much earlier. And I said, well, but people maybe thought, well, I've got great grandpa spear, I might as well throw it at the Romans. You know, I don't know how these things happen.
And actually, that's not too far away, even from the Galloway hordes finding, is it?
No, I'm looking out over the land. Of course, I couldn't possibly tell you where it
is. No, it's a... I cycle by it and I often see metal detectors, detectorists.
It's just a shame they didn't bury it on my side of the
road. Yeah, you'd have been selling £3 million fortune then, John. So, Parton, Crossmichael, and then profession-wise, did you go away to college or university?
I went to college, yeah, and up in Glasgow, and then came home. It was quite an exciting time in farming at that time.
Mm-hmm. Why was it an exciting time?
Because we were basically changing over from horses to machinery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So. And dairy or sheep?
Well, the home farm was cattle. Dairy. The farm I finished up on was my grandfather's. They were both farmed together. It was beef and sheep, really. But I've always been, because my grandfather's interest, I've always been interested in local history. Mm. So that's what drew me.
And what drew you, was it the uniqueness of John Kerr's story that drew you back to it? Or other factors?
Yes, well, it, partly because it was a family story, and I didn't know at that point. Well, I suppose it is unique if he's the last man hanged in Scotland for horse stealing.
It is.
Although there were going to be a lot before that. So I've always been quite interested in that way.
And did you find out, because obviously you have the time of what you experienced, the Highland clearances and things like that, so real brutal times.
Yeah.
Are there things you found out about him that you were surprised by, or?
About what?
About John Kerr, about his life,
yes,
the context.
I've written in the book that he rode through various areas that had just been cleared, and... you know, the tragedy of that, in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, perhaps as he rode through, the clearance hadn't really taken off to any great extent, but a few years later, because some of the clans or some of the people, they were their landlady, she insisted that they joined the army to fight and finished up at Waterloo. Mm-hmm. And when they returned, their glens were empty. She'd driven out their families while they were away. So they'd gone to risk their lives on her behalf, supposedly. Mm. But, so, you know, there was a lot of interesting stories. And, you know, when you go to Edinburgh and start researching, you invariably follow a thread. And if that reaches a brick wall, you maybe go sideways and that's an interesting story and a connected story. So I find a lot of connected stories which are,
and having written one book now,
yes,
is there another in you?
I don't think so.
Why? Because everybody says sometimes
I've enjoyed it. I joined a writing group, and my pal Mary Smith, the late Mary Smith, did you know her?
Yes.
No, I forgot.
Because she was
wonderful.
Because
you dedicated this book to Mary Smith.
Sorry? I dedicated it to her. Mm-hmm. Because she was so helpful and encouraged me. And she encouraged me to join a book, a writing group, which was fascinating, and it was so helpful. And I remember going to see her, maybe you don't want to hear this, but... I remember going to see her in December last year, and she had a terminal cancer. Mm-hmm. And she said, as we left, we had a wonderful afternoon with June each, and we were lots of laughing. And
good.
She says, now, before I die, I want a signed copy of your book.
Oh.
And I had submitted it to two or three publishers. And typically, you'll know this, you wait 4, 5, 6 months. And if you get a response, you may get, oh, what an excellent story, but our book is full at the moment, or it doesn't suit our whatever.
Exactly.
So I decided that night, right, I'm just going to get the local printer to print it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, they made a super.
So when you do your talk here, John, in March.
Are you back on, by the way?
Hmm?
You're going to go back on?
Back on.
Are you recording?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I can take that a little bit out. When you do your talk here in March, you mentioned earlier, you do it with slides, do you? So pictures, yes, and slides.
I have got a, well, the modern equivalent of slides.
On a USB on stick.
Digital iron. And I don't need a computer or anything. It just plugs straight into the projector.
Oh, excellent.
So that's quite good. That's, and, you know, every other week I'm somewhere. Last week I was at, I don't know whether it was senior citizens at Dalbeattie. The week before, we had an in-conversation with in our village hall to basically use the hall and to raise funds. So Ed Hex, who John Dean knows, he read excerpts from the book that John Dean published.
Yeah.
And I read excerpts from that, and it was a good fun night.
It's a fascinating book and a fascinating story, and we're so glad that you've come along to share it with us, and we're looking forward to the big event in March.
So tell us, given it's a book week, it's about books and writing and, you know, things like your books, I'm just totally in awe of, in terms of, you know, if you hadn't reclaimed a story, it might have been forgotten.
Absolutely.
What was the art of you that, like, you know, coming to writing this? Had you written some things before, or was this really
not particularly. Mm. I suppose once I started to write the gist of the story and started to go to a writing group, I sort of broadened it out a bit, and that was quite interesting. Mary always teased me. I would say, oh no, I don't want to write that, because I wanted to stick exactly to the facts.
Yeah.
Mm. And she says, well, there's not that many facts in a trial paper. And she says, but you know that he would put his left foot in the stirrup and throw his leg over and nudge the horse forward.
Mm.
Yeah. That's not in the trial papers, no.
Mm.
So you've got to be constructive. So there's one night I wrote a long story for the writing group, and it was a Dumfries story. And afterwards, people say, oh, what a wonderful story. Oh, I love your stories. I've lived in Dumfries for 20 years. I've never heard that story before. And I said, well, I have to tell you that 3/4 of it is rubbish.
Oh, not rubbish. You mean imagined?
It's imagined.
Creative writing.
No, it was actually, I said it was bullshit. And even the even the Latin motto above the town hall door says, this is all bullshit. And it says, I was just proving that, you know, I want to write the, you know, I don't want to broaden it out too far and introduce too much speculation.
Yeah. So, but you said earlier, you know, you've gone back to the world of 1811. You've taken it up to, you know, the present day and experienced that. You haven't thought maybe then there's other stories from that period, because that's the Napoleonic Wars, that's the Revolutionary Wars with France. That's an amazing period of Britain and world history.
Well, we have been to, I've been to Waterloo with my First World War connection. I went with a cousin, and that's mentioned in the book too. I went with a cousin to the Western Front to research his granduncle, who was lost in the First War, never found.
Yeah.
And so we had 2 days there, and while we were there, we got Waterloo and all the implications of that, which was quite fascinating too.
Yeah, cause I see that in the book, because you start, we're page 71, we come to the story on the Trail of the Broken Shoe, but just looking through it, there's your family stories, the Buff Envelope, Waterloo and the Peninsular War, Robert Patterson, aka Old Mortality, more family tales. So this, all these stories pre the Broken Shoe, you obviously thought, I'm going to get these down. I'm going to, this is what my grandfather told me, sat on my knee. Yeah, this is the opportunity to get them into this book. So it's more, in a way, just having flicked through it, John, than on the Trail of the Broken Shoe, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it fits in well with this, is it Scotland's Year of Stories?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And there are some really funny stories. There are some that will bring a tear to your eye too, I have to say. But there are a lot of amusing stories from perhaps a simpler time.
Yeah.
And it's been quite interesting.
Fascinating. Well, we're going to look forward to you being here in the Selkirk Arms Hotel in March. The date, again, is Friday the 3rd of March, 2:00 in the afternoon. It's only £3. to come along and hear
bring
John,
your family
bring the family
£10 to get back out
that's it to hear On the Trail of the Broken Shoe and more, because there is a lot more in there. And in fact, if you've got a spare copy, I'm going to buy one off you this afternoon before you go, John, because that'll be mine. But once I finish my Beatles book, I'm still on the Beatles book.
Keep off that for the moment. We're on John. But thank you very much, John.
John, thank you so much for coming along.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.